702.
Bruce is on the Money Show.
George is usually more responsive, but he had to pick himself up off the floor first. Let's talk about a failure of state-owned enterprises, a failure of the state. What happens when the government fails to do its job? Well, at first, the private sector steps in. It cherry-picks the most lucrative opportunities and then starts to privately provide services previously that were supplied by government. When health services opened up to all of the population in the early 1990s, the private sector was there to offer private services and private hospitals, because it was very clear that the public facilities that had been in existence before 1994 were simply not going to be up to the job of serving, at the time, about 40 million people. They'd been designed for 4 or 5 million people, certainly the nice ones. And private schooling and private security and private this, everything else. If things deteriorate further, then some of those companies that provide the private services either capitulate or fail. And then the strong devour the weak. And it doesn't take very long for a new private sector set of monopolies to develop. A good think piece today by the analyst Kaya Sitole, he's an independent political analyst, warning that privatization is coming, whether the ANC likes it or not, whether trade unions like it or not. And the problem with this privatization debate, Kaya, is it's like kryptonite to Superman that those in the ANC and the Labour movement really abhor. But what choice do they have? What choice do we have? Somehow we've got to fill the gap that government is leaving in its wake.
Yeah, I think it's the great irony of where we are, because if you look at the ANC and its alliance partners and essentially their ideological orientation, there is a fixation with controlling everything. So it is obviously based or influenced on what the Cubans and the Soviets used to do. So that's what they want to be able to do. However, what we are now seeing is that because of how badly they've managed these public services that they want to control, it has made it very inevitable for a lot of people to opt out if they can. And what that has done is that it has essentially then created a drain, if you want to call it that, a resource drain, where people who would otherwise be spending their money on a public hospital than for a private hospital. And that resource drain simply means that the ANC and the government then end up servicing the most marginalized and the most indigenous citizens whose capacity to actually pay for any of those services then simply quite doesn't exist. And what that has done is that it has created a much greater sense of dependency, a much greater sense of concentration of people who quite simply don't have any other options using those particular resources. And that, for me, I think is a great tragedy of how the ANC government's mismanagement of these key state resources has actually created to an accidental sense of privatization, even if they feel that they're against it.
And Eskom is a case in point as well. Eskom can't provide electricity, so you put some solar panels on your roof, or you put in an inverter, and you then generate your own electricity. Put some batteries in, you store the excess energy. City of Cape Town's not going to give you the opportunity to sell that excess energy onto the grid in the Western Cape. And so that's all going to work very nicely. That's all well and good. Big businesses' minds are taking them off. Even Seriti Resources today, Mike Tekke's company, is saying that it is building an enormous 155 megawatt wind farm over the next 2 years so that it can provide enough power for its coal mines in Mpumalanga so that it can supply Eskom with coal. It's one of those great ironic South African scenarios. But it's this weird thing. The state's not done its job. Now the private sector has to step in. But it does accentuate and exacerbate the already catastrophic inequality divide that we have in our country.
I think obviously how they're being gradually displaced is unfortunately creating a much wider sense of inequality across our societies. And I think whether you look at private security, private education, and any other dimension that you can look at, it is our sad reality that for a government that has said that the three greatest challenges that we face are poverty, unemployment, and inequality, it is their own actions that are actually widening those particular inequalities. It is also their own inability to find the right recipe or the right model for an economy that has all the structural issues and then run it in a manner that enables less people to be dependent on the state, more people to be employed, and of course for us to start tackling those inequalities. And I think in the long run, we're probably going to end up with a society that is structurally and economically much more divided than what we see now. And I think for a long time, you at least thought that the great commanding heights of the economy, whether you look at Transnet, for example, whether you look at Eskom or similar entities like that, at least at that when it came to those entities, there were still the universal usage or universal utilization of those state resources. But as you now say, with the case of Eskom, many more people are opting out. And what you've seen with the case of Transnet, it has conceded that it quite simply cannot do what it's meant to do. It's asking the private sector to step in. And the consequences of that, I think, is something that probably the government hasn't really understood well. And if they have, well, we don't see what they're doing to address it.
And here's the problem with privatization. I'm a big fan of privatization. I think if you bring greater efficiency in and you get people who are incentivized to deliver services, and I think it can work very well. There is a problem, though, that not every service pays equally. So what happens is the private sector comes in and chooses the most lucrative bits. They then choose the most lucrative customers to serve. And unless they're forced to serve everybody in the way the state should be doing at a regulated rate and within a suitable regulatory environment, well, then they just simply go to where it's easiest to make money fastest. We've got to be very cautious of that.
Yes, and I think obviously in instances like this, you then wonder if the regulatory interventions are the ones that correct these market imperfections. But even last week, I'd written an article about how the president himself is now actively undermining regulators, because if you look at what the energy regulator essentially tries to do, it acknowledges that, look, for as long as Eskom remains a monopoly, Eskom can indeed charge runaway prices. And because there is no credible or at least substantive competition, it simply means that we ordered risk. So therefore, regulators must step in and say, wait, hold on. Even though you're providing that service, you cannot do so at prices that I trust quite simply unaffordable for a lot of citizens. So that's where the regulatory regime comes in. But when we then start undermining even the regulators themselves, it simply means that the next time there is a regulatory announcement that says that this is the utility and this is the price that can be charged, well, everybody will say, well, President, intervene again. So it has actually created a much longer regulatory crisis that is going to outlast us beyond the Ramaphosa presidency.
Kaya Sithole, thank you. The independent political analyst, Kaya Sithole, this evening. In a moment, we are going to be having a look at the whole issue of Tottenham Hotspur and the sponsorship that is causing a big fight. Let's talk to the Tourism Business Council of South Africa in the next few minutes.